Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Mem Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will see more than halfway down Daf Mem Dalid, 12 lines from the bottom. Shor Shahoya Mischachich Bekoisel, an ox that was scratching itself or rubbing into a wall. Finofal al Ha'odom, and the wall fell on a person. Niskafe laharog es habehema v'horag es ha'odom. The animal had intent to kill a fellow animal, but it ended up killing a person. Liknani v'horag ben Yisrael. The animal had intention of killing an idol worshiper, or a Canaanite, and ended up killing a regular Jew. Linefilim v'horag ben Kayoma. It had the intention of killing a Nefel. Nefel is a child that's born that will not continue to survive, and that's what the animal intended to kill, but ended up killing a Ben Kayoma, a healthy living person. In all of these cases, Potter, there is exemption. Now, when we speak about exemption from what? Omar Shmuel, Potter Mimisa, V'chayov B'Koyfer. There is exemption from death, an animal in general, and we've discussed this in our recent Shiurim, an animal that kills a person with intent, is Chayav Skilas, is culpable of being stoned, put to death. In these cases, the animal's intent was not with intent to kill that kind of individual that would warrant the animal being put to death. Though, at the end of the day, that's what happened, that a person that would generate the stoning did die, but that was not the animal's intent. So Shmuel says, as a result of that, the animal is exempt from the death penalty. However, v'chayev b'kofer, the owner of the animal, has to pay the kofer payment. Kofer is the name of the payment that is made when an animal kills a human being, a ben chorin. Rav Omar, poter mizeh mizeh. There's agreement between Rav and Shmuel on the exemption from death as far as the animal is concerned. However, Rav extends the exemption to the realm of kofer as well, namely, there is no kofer paid in the cases featured in the Mishnah either. Now, Rashi points out that Rav is like Rabba that we saw on Daf Mem Gimel Omer Aleph. He was the focus of our previous shiur, who said that if an animal kills a ben chorin shelo b'kavona, poter mikofer. Poter mikofer. An animal, Rabba said, that kills a ben chorin, a regular Jew, but without intent, the owner is exempt from paying kofer. Lefizeh, Shmuel, and I should point out that the reason for Rabba's point of view is that the pasuk that makes reference to kofer, to the kofer, the need to make the payment of kofer, also refers to the animal being stoned. Therefore, if the animal kills without intent, it is not stoned. Therefore, no kofer is paid. Lefizeh, according to this approach, Shmuel shemechayev shelo b'kavona b'kofer. Shmuel was the first opinion over here who says that shelo b'kavona, a killing without intent, leads to kofer anyway. Domel Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish, Shmuel is similar to Rabbi Yochanan v'Reish Lakish, that shedorshu, they darshan the posuk im kofer. The word im, that the Torah adds, l'chayev kofer shelo b'kavona kamo b'kavona. So that even though we've learned a new Mishnah and we're introducing two new opinions, Shmuel and Rav, Nevertheless, they parallel opinions that we saw back on Daf Mem Gimel. The Gemara asks a question on Shmuel. How can you say that the owner has to pay kofar? Kofar is a payment that is made by the owner of an animal that's a muad, that's shown its proclivity toward goring. This animal, in the Mishnah, it seems, we're talking about a one-time event. It's considered tam, it's a docile animal, and kofar is not paid when a person is killed by a tam. So the Gemara asks, V'amai, why did Shmuel say, Chayav v'kofar, ha tamhu, is it not a tam? The Gemara answers, K'da'omar Rav, as Rav explains elsewhere. B'muad lipol al b'nei oda b'boros, an animal that has shown its proclivity toward pouncing upon, so jumping upon, falling upon people in pits. Hochanami, so too over here, b'muad l'schachich al b'nei odom b'ksolem. We're talking about an animal that has this practice. It's shown its propensity toward this by repeat rubbing on walls, pushing them the walls on people. Ihochi, if that's the case, bar katlahu, it's the animal is pushing walls with intent on people to kill them, so it should be put to death. Why does Shmuel say potter, that the animal is potter mi misa? The question continues. Bishlamohasam, I can understand over there in the case of the animal that we said is a muad with regard to falling on people in pits. And there we see that the animal is not put to death. Bishlam Hasam, the Chazi Yeruka Venofal. The animal saw vegetation, food for itself in the pit. And once it sees that, it will fall pounce upon the Yeruka, the vegetation. And people may be in its way in the pit, but it's killing of the people there is without kavona. It's without intent. However, elahocha, my ikol lemeimar, over here with regard to the wall, how can you describe this without saying that the animal had intent? Now, how can you explain a ptur misa? Just to repeat, there in the case of the animal being muad, falling on people in pits, and yet the animal remains poter rimiso, we explain that away by the animal not having intent to fall on the people. It had intent to fall upon food that was there. But over here, what kind of low miskaving of lack of intent could be attributed to the animal here? The Gemara answers, Hochonami, so too here, b'mischachich b'koysu lahanoso. The animal's rubbing on the wall is to supply the animal with pleasure, to provide the animal with pleasure. Uminoya dinan, how do you know that that's what the animal's intent is, and not to shove the wall on a person? Answer, Deboser denofal kol mischachich bei. After the wall falls down, the animal continues rubbing in it, rubbing in the rubble that was once the wall. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis Ve'akati, but still, with all of these explanations, we're not describing a situation that kofar would be paid. Kofar is paid only when the animal bodily kills somebody. We explained already the ptur misa, the exemption from death, from stoning, because the animal did not have murderous intent. Fine. But what about the kofar? Vakati tsuros ninho, the Gemara here at the top of Amud Beis asks. This still, what has happened here is the animal pushed upon a wall, and that projected stones further on and killed someone there. That's called tsuros. That's a subcategory of regel, of the archetype, a form of damage that we learned about it in our first mission of the Masechta, called Regel, or we should say it's one of the Ovos Nezikin alluded to in the beginning of the Masechta. And that is not connected, it has no relevance then to the payment of kofar. Tzuros is an extension of regel. Kofar is paid only when the animal does has bodily, body contact with the victim at the time of his death, not where the animal projects stones or other projectiles resulting in the death of a person. Omar Rav Mori Brei Rav Kahana. Rav Mori explains how there is kofar, how this is not a case of tsuros, of projectiles. The ka'azil mine. The animal, while knocking down the wall, is also pushing it, shoving whatever rubble there is until it lands on the person. So there's contact between the animal, utensil of death and the victim at the same time. However, as we said before, he's doing all this because he's rubbing on he's enjoying himself, he's deriving pleasure from the contact, from the friction between it and the rubble. The animal is not behaving thusly with the intent of killing the victim. Tanya kavose de Shmuel utyufto de Rav. We'll present now a Tanaic source that will support Shmuel and serve as a refutation of Rav. I just want to point out, we mentioned earlier that Rav, we saw through the Rashi, is paralleled with Rabbah. Tosfos on Daf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph in Dibur Maskil Omar Rabbah mentions a version, a text version of the Rashbam that has here Tiufta instead of the Rav has Tiufta the Rabbah. This is what the source will refute Rabbah. But Rav and Rabbah, we said in our in this discussion, are over, they overlap, they're interchangeable. But it is interesting to note, nevertheless, that we have a Tanaic source that will refute Rabbah. In my opinion, it might be a better girsa to have Tufta de Rabbah, because when you have a brisa running up against Rav, elsewhere in the Shas, you do see the expression that Rav Tanahu Upolig, that Rav, being from the first generation of Amoroyim and of a primary nature, he has the power to disagree with we'll say, certain kinds of Tanaic sources. I wouldn't say a Mishnah, but a Brisa, which we have over here, is something that wouldn't necessarily be described as a tyufta, as a refutation of Rav. However, Rabbah, though he was also a very great Amoraic figure, he nevertheless could be described as being refuted by a brisa. Hence, that girsa might be more comfortable. So now, what do we expect to see in this brisa? We expect to see, and you can see we've dashed, underlined already the main point, which is a standard procedure for Gemara markings. In the middle of this brisa, you'll see a description of Muad Shaloba Kavona, a Shor HaMuad, that kills without intent, Chayav B'Koyfer, Upotami Misa. That's exactly like Shmuel, and that's what we said. Tanya Kavosi to Shmuel, we're bringing a Tanaic source to support Shmuel. Rav and Rabbah, on the other hand, would have said Potter Mizel Misa, Potter from Kofar as well as Potter Mimisa. Now the source. The source opens with a list of four cases, and then those four cases, which we've numbered, will be reviewed with the explanation. And the same numbering continues, you can see in our markings, the 1 through 4, then circled. The source. Yesh chayav b'miso u'b'kofer. There is a case where there's an obligation, guilt of being put to death, and owner pays kofer. V'yesh chayav b'kofer u'poter mimisa. V'yesh chayav b'miso u'poter mina kofer. V'yesh poter mizeh u'mizeh. Ha ketzad. How do we account for each one of these cases? Number one, muad bekavona, an animal that is, first of all, it's a muad. It's repeated the act three times, and it does so. It kills with murderous intent. Chayav b'misa, so the animal is put to death. Ubekofer, and the owner pays kofer. Kofar, once again, is the payment made when a ben chorin, when a Jew, is killed by an animal. Muad shelo bekavona, chayav bekofar, upoter mimisa. Muad shelo bekavona was the case that was featured in our Mishnah, and Shmuel on that had said that there's an exemption from Misa because the murder, the death of the person was without the animal's murderous intent. However, Kofar is paid, you're dealing with a Muad, and the point is that though it's Shelo B'Kavona, Kofar nevertheless is paid. That is a support to Shmuel, which is against the opinion reflected by Rav and Rabbah. Tam B'Kavona, a tam that kills with intention, chayav b'misa, upoter mikofer. Kofer is stated in the Torah only with regard to a muad that kills. Tam shelo b'kavona, poter mizeh umizeh. The tam, without any murderous intent that happened to kill someone, so it is not subject to misa, it is not subject to kofer, because kofer was stated only by muad, not by tam in the Torah. V'hanizokin shelo b'kavona. What about an animal that wreaks damage without intent? Rabbi Yehuda Machayev, Rabbi Shimon Poter. Rabbi Yehuda says that the owner must offer compensation, and Rabbi Shimon says that nezikin shelo b'kavona, the owner is exempt. My time under Rabbi Yehuda. What is the basis, the reason for Rabbi Yehuda? The answer, yolif mikofro. He learns from the way we approach kofer. Ma koifro shelo b'kavona. Chayov, just like kofer is paid, even though the animal killed without intention, and this is in accordance with what we saw in the Tanaic source, based on the drosha im kofer, the additional word of im includes kofer to be paid, even shelo b'kavona, even without intent, like in the case of an animal killing with intent. Af hanazikinami. So too, compensation for damage. Likewise, shelo b'kavona is chayav, even though the animal damaged without intent, the owner must compensate. For Rabbi Shimon who says there's exemption because there was lack of intent, yolif mikatle deshor. He learns from the way we approach the killing of the ox. Ma katle shelo b'kavona poter, just like regarding the death penalty of the animal, it is exempt when it comes to its having killed someone without intent, without murderous intent. Af nezikin shelo b'kavona poter, so too where the animal causes damage without intent, the owner is exempt from pain. Rabbi Yehuda nami nelif mikatle. Rabbi Yehuda, why does he not learn from katle, from the laws of killing of the animal, to exempt in the case of nezik and shelo b'kavona? Answer, donin tashlumin mi tashlumin, v'in donin tashlumin mi misa. We learn the laws of payment of nezikin from laws of payment, which is kofer. Kofer is payment, where we're mechayev shelo b'kavona. However, the ain don in tashlumin, I'm not going to learn the laws of compensation, of money compensation, mimisa, from laws regarding the execution of the animal. Rabbi Shimon nami nelif mikofro. Rabbi Shimon who says there's exemption, why does he not learn from the way we approach kofer, where kofer is paid? Answer, donin chiyuve deshor, michiyuve deshor. Rabbi Shimon says, I learn laws that obligate where the animal is responsible from other laws that obligate the animal, namely the execution of the animal. Lafuki kofer de chiyuvi de bailim hu. Kofer is an obligation upon the owner. What do we mean by that? The owner, kofer, as we've explained in previous discussions, kofer is a source of atonement. As Rashi says, kaporas nafsho. It's his personal, the owner's atonement. Hence, as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, the way we deal with kofar is, we'll say, person-centered, and hence it has no relevance to laws regarding the ox's wreaking of damage. Hiskavi Larugis Abahema Vaharagis Aldom Potter. The Mishnah said there's exemption when the animal's intent is to kill an animal and ends up killing a person. We can infer, though, Honis Kave Laharog Eze, the Horag Eze Chayav. If the animal had an initial intent to kill one person and then ended up killing another person, that would lead to the animal's execution. The exemption is only because the animal's initial intent was to kill an animal. But if it had intent to kill a person and ended up killing another person, the animal would be executed. Well, that approach is not like Rabbi Shimon. Masnisin de loka Rabbi Shimon. De Sanya. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, afilu niskave laro gezeh vahora gezeh poter. Rabbi Shimon says that where there was intent to kill one person and another person was killed, there is exemption. There is no death penalty. My time under Rabbi Shimon. What is the basis of Rabbi Shimon? The Yomar Krah, the Pasuk says, Hashor Yisokeh V'gam all of you must. The animal that kills is put to death, and the owner must also pay a price. Kemisas Habailim Kach Misas Hashor. The laws that apply to people will apply equally to the animal. Ma Bailim Achim Michavein Lei. As far as the owner, a person that commits murder, he is not subject to death until the person that's killed is the one he had intend to kill. Afshor nami ad demechavein lei. So too, the animal is not put to death until the animal had intent to kill the person that was killed. However, as far as Rabbi Shimon is concerned, if the animal intended, even if it was an intent to kill person A, and he ended up killing person B, the animal would not be executed. Ubailim gufayu minolon. As far as the owner themselves, the person himself, how does Rabbi Shimon know that? Namely, exemption from capital punishment if intent was to kill A and you ended up killing B. Diomar Kro, the Pasuk says, V'orav loy v'kom olav. And that tells me, Ashi is kaving lo, that there's no death penalty for murder unless the person that was killed is the one you intended to kill. This discussion so far has been focusing on Rabbi Shimon. V'rabonon hai v'orav lo mai avdilei. The Rabbonon who disagree with Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbonon say if someone had intent to kill A and ended up killing B, the murderer is chayav, is subject to being executed, to a death penalty. What did the Rabbonon learn from this pasuk, which has an exemption built into it? The pasuk said, v'orav lo v'kom olav. What did the Rabbonon do with this pasuk? After all, just to repeat ourselves, after all, the Rabbanan hold that if there's intent to kill Mr. A and Mr. B ends up being killed, the offender is put to death. So, Amri Debay Rabbianai, Prat Lazorik Evan Lego. The Rabbanan use this pasuk to exempt someone who throws a rock that kills someone, Lego, into a crowd, into a group. Hey Chidomi, what are the circumstances that warrant a pasuk to offer exemption? There are circumstances that even without a pasuk, I would know that there is exemption. This pasuk, v'orav lo v'kom olav, speaks about someone that has intent to kill and ends up killing. Built into this pasuk, there's exemption. And we said there's exemption, according to the Rabbanan, when a person throws a rock into a crowd and someone is killed. Hey, Chidami, but what are the circumstances? And more precisely, what are the circumstances that warrant a pasuk? Namely, that without the pasuk, I would have thought there is guilt. With the pasuk, I now learn there's innocence. At the same time, bear in mind that the Rabbanan hold that if you intended to kill Mr. A, and in that act you ended up killing Mr. B, You're guilty. What about this pasuk that speaks about innocence? What are the circumstances? The triangles introduce three stages to find out what I need the pasuk for. If you're to think that we're talking about a case where there are a group of 10 people, 9 Canaanites and 1 Jew. And the we know, as we've alluded to this before, that the killing of an idol worshiper or of a Canaanite would not lead to a death penalty. So here you have a group of 9 Canaanites and 1 Israelite amongst them. And the stone ended up killing the Israelite. Tepuklei, let us derive innocence, exemption from death penalty. The Ruba Knaininu, the majority of people here were Canaanites, that kind of person that would not generate a death penalty anyway. So he threw the rock into a group. The majority of people there, the majority of potential victims, would not have resulted in a death penalty anyway. I don't need a pasuk then to describe exemption under circumstances like that, when there was a majority in the direction of innocence anyway. Inami, even if you say, another scenario, palgo, 50%, if there were 10 people, so 5 were Canaanites and 5 were Jews, and the rock killed a person, he killed a Jew, the fellow who hurled the rock, without, of course, focusing on any specific victim, he hurled the rock into the crowd, he'll be innocent anyway, because it was 50-50. And when you have palgo, he's half generating a death penalty, half not, we say sofek, it's a doubt, nefoshos lahokel. And when you have a doubt concerning a capital case, based on another pasuk, v'shoftu eid v'etzilu eid, that Rashi cites, we learn that you take the lenient approach. So I don't need this pasuk of Orav Loi V'Kamalov for a scenario like that either. Lo, Tzricha, no, I need the pasuk Dikotishi Yisraelim V'Echad Knaini. There's a group of 10 people, 9 are Israelites and 1 is a Canaanite. The Afagav Deruba Yisraelim Minu, even though the majority are Jews. And when you have a question of doubt to settle, we often say, follow the rov. The rov, in this case, are people that would generate a death penalty for the offender. And here a person hurled a rock into a group where 9 of the 10 potential victims would have generated a death penalty. And the rock killed one of the Jews. The pasuk comes to say he is exempt. He is innocent in terms of he is exempt from the death penalty. Kevon deiko chalek nayni binayu, since there is 1 Canaanite amongst the group. Have le kavua. Kavua is an expression literally meaning he's fixed. The group of people spoken of here were a group that gathered together in their, we'll say, in their standard location. They're always found over there as a group. One of them happened to have been a Canaanite while the 9 others were Israelites. When you have a situation of kavua, this pasuk reveals a chiddush, a law that that we as human beings would not have thought of on our own. And it says, v'chol kavua, whenever items are in their fixed place, kemechzo al mechzo domi, it creates a legal situation of 50-50. And once we say it's really 50-50, v'sofek nefoshos lahokel, and then we take the more we take the lenient track, and he is exempt. So without the pasuk, I would have simply followed the majority, and the majority of potential victims generate a chiyuv misa, and the pasuk v'arav lo v'kama lo tells me you don't follow the standard Torah law, because here we have a situation of people in their fixed location where they're generally found, where they generally gather together, and as such, a new law kicks in that says kol kavua kamechza amechza dami. The Mishnah. Before we continue with the Mishnah itself, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. Number one, Rishima Shel Shvarim Shimhargu Adam Chayavim Skila. We're going to see a list of oxen that if they kill a person, they are to be stoned. Number two, Machlokes Tanoim Bishor Hefker Shehemis Im Chayav Skila. A Tanaic disagreement regarding an unowned shor that kills, will it be subject to stoning, to itself being killed? The Mishnah. Shor ho'isha, an ox owned by a woman. Shor ha'yisomim, an ox owned by orphans. They don't have an executor taking care of their estate. Shor ha'apotropos, this is a case of an ox owned by orphans and there is an executor that is expected to watch it. Shor ha-midbar, a shor in the desert. Shor ha-hegdish, a sanctified shor, sanctified ox. Shor ha-ger shemes vein lo yorshim, the shor that was owned by a convert to Judaism that himself died leaving no heirs. Harei elu chayova misaf, one of these animals kills, it is subject to being executed. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and Rabbi Yehuda alludes to numbers 4, 5, and 6 in the list, Shor ha-midbar, Shor ha-hegdish, Shor ha-ger, Shemes, Pturin, Min ha-misa, Lefi She'ein, Lehem Bailim. They are exempt from the death penalty, even though they killed, they are not put to death, because they do not have an owner. Tonu Rabbanan. And here we have a brisa that goes over the points mentioned in the Mishnah. Shor, Shiva, there are seven allusions to a shor in the Parsha, in the section of the Torah that deals with an animal goring a man. Seven times the word shor appears, lahavi, to include the list of shvorim that we saw in the Mishnah. Now in the Mishnah there were six that constituted the list. The seven words are explained as referring to the six in the Mishnah. They come to include the six in the Mishnah. And the first shor, one of them is for the halacha itself. In other words, it's not inclusive of something else, but it refers to the basic halacha, that a shor that kills a person is put to death. So your basic shor number one plus six, Lahavi, comes to include, enables us to include Shor Ha'isha, Shor Ha'yasomim. Now you're asking, well, Shor Isha, without the extra words you would have thought otherwise. So Rashi says, in the Pasuk, the term Baal Hashor appears, the owner of the ox, and that word Baal Hashor is in the masculine form. So Rashi says there was room to think that maybe the Parsha dealing with the section of the Torah dealing with the murderous ox is only when an adult man owns it. Hence, the presence of the extra shor words enables me to include beyond that specific case. Hence, we include shor ha'isha, shor ha'yasomim, shor ha'apotropos, shor ha'midbar, shor ha'hegdish, shor ha'ger shemes ve'ein lo yorshim. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shor ha-midbar, Shor ha-hegdish, Shor ha-ger, Shemes, Ve'ein, Lo Yorshim, Turim, and Amisa, Lefi She'ein, Lohem, Bailim. Basically, everything that we saw already in the Mishnah. Omar Rav Huna, Poter hoy Rabbi Yehuda, Afilu Nogach, Ula Besof Higdish, Nogach, Ula Besof Hivkir. Rabbi Yehuda, who says there is exemption from stoning regarding the ox, says so even if at the time of the murder, of the killing of the person, even if at the time of the goring, it was still owned. Afterwards, the owner declared it sanctified. The owner declared it unowned. He renounced ownership. That's Hefker. Even under circumstances like that, the animal is exempt from stoning, according to Rebuta. Mimai. From where do we know that? And here we have a long answer marking. Midekotoni tarti, from the fact that there are two examples of shor that's hefker, why do I need two examples? Shor ha-midbar, v'shor ha-ger shemeis v'ein lo yorshin. Shor ha-ger shemeis ma'imihu, what is being described in legal terms when you speak about the shor, an ox owned by a convert that died? In other words, the owner was a convert to Judaism. The owner died. What legal ramifications does that have? The cave on the Ein Lo Yorshim, since he has no heirs, Havelei, Shor Hefker. If he converted to Judaism and had no offspring after that, he left no heirs. So since he has no one to inherit him, the ox that is left is unowned. It's Shor Hefker. Well, Hainu Shor HaMidbar. Hainu Shor HaGer Shemes Ve'Ein Lo Yorshim. Then the ox of the desert and the ox of this convert that died leaving no heirs are one and the same. It seems to be redundant in legal terms. Elolav Hakom Ashmalon. The extra reference to an unowned ox teaches me Dafilu Nogach Ulebesov Higdish. Nogach Ulebesov Hifkir. Shma Mina. That even if the ox happened to be owned at the time of the goring, it was later declared sanctified, like Rav Huna taught. It was later became hefker. Even in those cases, no execution, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So Shema Mino, this is conclusive. Tanya Nami Hachi, and we have a Tanaic source that supports this. Yeser Al Kain Omer Rabbi Yehuda Afilu Nogach Ulebesof Higdish. Nogach Ulebesof Hifkir. Potter. Even if at the time of the goring it was owned, but only later was declared sanctified or ownership renounced, the animal is exempt from being stoned. Shinemar, the Pasuk says, V'hu'ad b'v'olav v'heimis v'chulei. There is a bracketed section of this source, and we skip it for a moment. And we learn from this pasuk that said, "V'uad bevolav behemis achte misa v'amodav adin ugmar din shavan keachad." Death of the animal will not take place until you have the following three stages all under the same ownership: the death of the victim, the person that was killed, the bringing of the case to justice, and the final verdict. Shavan keachad means they're all equal in one, meaning there has to be a single constant ownership till the very end, till the Gemar Din, in order for us to speak about the animal being executed. If you don't have that consistency, but rather Shas Misa, it was owned, and then later it was declared sanctified or unowned, then there would be no execution. The Pasuk had mentioned V'ad B'Volav V'Heimis. The huad involves a reference to the court, and the hemis, and then the animal is put to death. Let's go over the bracketed section, which had a minor inaccuracy in it, and that's why the Gemara had to redo it. So we have the cited pasuk of huad bevolav v'hemis, and now in the brackets, achte misa v'amoda bedin shoven kechad. There is no execution of the animal until you have the initial murder of the person at the hands of the animal and the bringing of the animal to court under one ownership. If we were to stop here, that would leave room to think that even if after Hamad Abedin the owner would declare it unowned, the animal would be exempt. I should say the animal would be chayav. Let me repeat that. If we pause here, you would have a chiyuv skila if the ownership existed at the time of the death of the person and they bring him to the court, even though at the time of the verdict, prior to the verdict, the owner had declared it unowned, we would still kill the animal. But the Gemara asks, that's not true. Ugamar din lo bohinan. Do we not require the verdict also to be part of that continuum? Misa, Hamad Bedin, and Gemar Din under one ownership. If not, there would be no execution. Vaha Shor Yisokel, Gemar Din who? The Pasuk speaks about Shor Yisokel. The animal is then stoned. So you have in the very Pasuk that we spoke about, the Vuhu Bivolov. Let's even read the Pasuk together. Shmos, Perek, Chof, Aleph, Pasuk, Chof, Tes. The Pasuk says, Ve'im shor nagohu, mitmol shilshom. You're dealing with a shor hamud, v'huad biv'olov, v'lo yishmerenu v'hemis ish o isha. You have the court case taking place concerning an animal that killed a person. Hashor Yisokel, v'gam of Yumos. Then the animal is put to death. But what elements do you see in the Pasuk? You see the Misa, Hemis Isha Oisha, the death of the person. You see the V'huad Bivolov, which is the bringing of the case to court. And you have Hashor Yisokel. That's the Gemar Din, that's the verdict, where the animal is then stoned. So we learn from this as we Elo Emo, we continue in our Gemara. Elo Emo, Achte Misa Vamodabin Ugemardin, Shovin Kechon, until all three elements are together under the same consistent ownership. To of course the exclusion of the case where if in the interim prior to Gemardin the owner declared it unowned, there would be no execution of the animal. And that is of course what we saw in Shitas Rebbe Yehuda, and of course Rav Huna's extension of Rebbe Yehuda, where Rav Huna said Poter Rebbe Yehuda filu nogach ubelusov hiknish. Before we continue with the new Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading. It reads Shor Shahorag Odom, an ox that killed a person, ha'im nitan lahakdisho, l'mochro. Is it possible to sanctify it? Does it take hold if you sanctify it? To sell it? Is it a sale? Well, we look at different stages in time. Ad shelo nigmar dino, if the owner acts before the verdict is handed in, or kishiyotse lisokel, or when it's on its way to be stoned, namely after the verdict. The Mishnah. Shor shehu yoytse lisokel, an animal that's going out to be stoned. Vikdishu bailov, and the owner sanctifies it. Eino muktosh, the sanctification does not take hold. Shachto, if he slaughters it at that point. Besaro, also the meat is forbidden. Veimad shalonig mardino higdeshu bailov, muktosh, if prior to the gemardin, the verdict, he sanctifies it, the sanctity takes hold. V'im shachtoi, and if he slaughters it at that point, besoro muter, the meat is allowed. Mosroi l'shoymer chinam l'shoyel l'nosei socher l'socher. An animal was given to a watchman. Shomer chinam, someone who was watching gratis. And of course, We should add, this is a new section of the Mishnah, and we're speaking about a case of the animal being given over to be watched before it gored. And it's given to one of these four different kinds of shoimrim. Shoimrim are watchmen, one who watches for nothing. A shoyel is one who borrows the animal. A nosei socher is one who's paid to watch. A socher is one who rents the animal. Nichnesu tachas habailim. These shoimrim take the position of the owner. And if the animal damages under their watch, they, the Shomrim, are obligated to compensate, as the owner would have been obligated. Muad Mishale Nezek Shalem, if the animal is Muad, the watchman will pay full damages. Vitam, if it's a Tam type animal, it's docile, then Mishalem Chatzi Nezek. Half damages will be paid. Tonu Rabbonan, Shor Shehemis, an animal that killed a person. Ad Shelo Nigmar Dino, if prior to the verdict, Mochro, we continue at the top of Daf Mem Hey, Mochur, the sale is a sale. Rashi points out, Mochur Hu L'Ridya, that means if someone had bought the animal prior to the Gemar Din, and he used the animal for plowing purposes. That's a legitimate transaction. This doesn't preclude the eventuality of the animal receiving a verdict of death, at which point it will be put to death. That is, we'll say, a later stage. But as far as whatever transaction was done before that, it's a legitimate transaction. Quite, and of course, to the exclusion of a case if such a transaction took place after the Gemar Din, then it would not be, one would not be allowed to plow with such an animal. Likewise, if prior to the Gemar Din he sanctified the animal, Hekdesho Mukdash, Rashi points out, what do we mean it's sanctified? This animal eventually is going to have a sentence to be executed, to be stoned. What value is there in speaking about it as being sanctified? So Rashi says, the point is, if a person uses the animal for personal benefit after the owner sanctified it, there would be mi'ilah. He would be guilty of using for personal purposes a sanctified animal. In other words, there's legitimacy in this sanctification, which was done prior to the Gemar Din, prior to the verdict. Shochto, if the owner slaughters the animal prior to the Gemar Din, Besoro Mutter, the meat is allowed. You can benefit from the meat. Hechziro Shoimer Lebeis Bailov Muhsar, an animal that was under someone's watch and it killed someone, and the watchman returned it to the owner prior to Gemar Din, prior to the verdict. The Shomer bears no guilt. He doesn't have to offer any further compensation. He says to the owner, I gave you back your animal. However, taking all of these cases, but just moving ahead one stage in time, Misha Nigmar Dino, if after the verdict was handed in, Mochro, Eino Mochor, the attempt to sell it would be a non-sale. We indicated before that if a person sold the animal even for plowing purposes, one would not be allowed to plow with it. This is an animal that one is not allowed to benefit from. It's received a verdict of guilt and execution. Hegdesho eino mukdash. The sanctification wouldn't take hold. Shochto, if a person slaughtered the animal at this point, basaro usser, the meat is forbidden to benefit from. Hechziru shomer lebeis bailov, eino mukhsar. The shomer attempts to return the animal after it received a verdict under the watch of this shomer. The shomer's attempt to return it would not be acceptable. It's not mukhsar, and the shomer will have to compensate the owner with either with a new animal or with the value of the animal that he received. Now, regarding this last point, we have two opinions. That's why we have a little aleph over eino mukhsar. Beis, Rabbi Yankiv, Oimer, Af Misha Nigmar Dino, Hechziru Shomer, Labailov, Mukhsar. Rabbi Yankiv disagrees and says that even if the verdict was handed in and only then the watchman returned the animal to the owner, the watchman has fulfilled his obligations. What is the analysis of this machlokes? So we have here a couple of stages in the Gemara. You can see we've used a diamond and a double underline to highlight the stages of analysis. This is also explained on the side of the Gemara. We have a topic heading. Shor shenigmar dino brishus shomer, an ox that killed and received a verdict of guilt under the watch of a shomer. Haim yochal shomer, can the watchman, the one in who was entrusted with the animal, can he yochal shomer? Haim yochal shomer lachzir lebaylov the potter, can he return the animal in this state and be exempt, bear no further obligations? Structurally, we see in our Gemara a double underline with diamonds. These are nisyonos, these are attempts, lahasbir machlokes atanoim, to explain this Tanaic disagreement between Tanakama and Rabbi Yaakov. Im hechzir lubay lovacha shenigmar dino im nechshav muchzor, is it considered returned? So now we go to the Gemara. Lema beha kumifligi. Can we say that it's in the following that they disagree? The Rabbanan Savri, Ein Oimrim Beisure Hano, when dealing with items forbidden in benefit, a Shor Haniskal, an animal that's been condemned to death by the court, that's an animal that is Osir Bahano. Another example of something Osir Bahano would be Chometz on Pesach. Do the Rabbonan, do they represent an opinion that says that Ein Oimrim Bisur Hano Hare Shelcha Lefonecha? Here, take your thing back. In the case of Chometz Pesach, imagine the following. Imagine someone stole Chometz from someone, and he stole the Chometz before Passover. Pesach went by, and after Pesach, the thief said, here, take your bread back. According to this construction, the Rabbanan would say, it doesn't work. The person who is obligated does not exempt himself when he attempts to return Isur Hanah. So the Shomer is not off the hook when he returns the animal that had a Gemar Din of Misa under his watch. The thief who returns Chometz Shavar Lava Pesach, Chometz that was in the thief's possession over Pesach, and now after Pesach he tries to return it, it doesn't work. For Rabbi Yaakov Sovar, and Rabbi Yaakov would be of the opinion that we do say thusly regarding Isuri Hana, something that you're not allowed to benefit from. Nevertheless, even though it doesn't have any, we'll say, monetary value, the person who owes it can fulfill his obligation of return by returning the item itself, even though it's Osir Bahana. Omar Rabba responds to this suggestion, and he says, not so. De kule alma, all opinions will tell you, Oimrim b'isur hano ha'reisho chalofanecha, that when it comes to this issue of return of isur hano, you do fulfill your obligation of return by returning the item itself. De im kein, if that were not so, then nifloig le'inyan chometz bepesach, then let the Rabbonon argue with Rabbi Yaakov concerning chometz bepesach and say that the thief who tries to return the bread that he stole before Pesach and returned it after Pesach, he has not fulfilled his obligation. But we don't see a machlokes concerning chometz bepesach, which is called the classic case of something that became osir bahano. So that's not the point of controversy. Ela hacha, rather here, regarding the shor shenigmar dino in the rishus of the shomer, the issue here, begoimim dino shel shor shelo b'fanav kamifligi, the issue concerns the rendering of a verdict upon the animal in the absence, when it is not around, when the animal is not present. So just to repeat that last point, the nekuda, the point of controversy, concerns this issue. Can a verdict concerning the animal be rendered without the animal being there in court? The Rabbanon Savri, Ein Gomrim Dino Shel Shor Ela Befonav. A verdict concerning a murderous animal cannot be rendered unless the animal is present. The Omar Lay, the owner, can say to the Shomer, Iadrise Nihali, had you returned the animal to me before the verdict, I would have had the animal escape into the fields, into the marshes. Hashta, but now look what you did. You have given over the animal into the hands of the court, into the hands of one that I can't argue against them. I have no chance against them. Rashi emphasizes here that the Shomer, in a proactive fashion, wronged the owner in so far as his having given the animal over to the court. And the owner feels that that caused his animal to be sentenced to death. Had you returned the animal to me, says the owner to the Shomer, had you returned it to me prior to the verdict, I would have had the animal run into the fields, and no verdict could have been rendered. Why? Because the Rabbanan hold Ein Gomrim Dino Shel Shor Ela Befonav. For Rabbi Yaakov Savar, Gomrim Dino Shel Shor Shelo Befonav. The verdict could be handed in even if the animal is not present. The Omar Lay, the Shomer, can respond to the owner, self, Migmar Havo Gamri Lay Ladina. The court would have rendered its decision anyway, and that I didn't return it to you earlier, before the Gemar Din, but only after the Gemar Din, that has no effect on the animal's eventual sentencing. And therefore, my non-return of the animal to you is called Hezeka de Memela. It's Hezek that resulted on its own, even without me, i.e., the court verdict is something that I had nothing. I and my actions would have made no difference regarding the court verdict on your animal. And as Hezeka de Memela, we say Hefzero Muchzer. The return is a return, just like the return of Chometz She'ovar Lava Pesach. The Pesach made the bread usher, not the thief. And that's called Hezek de Memela. It's Hezek that happened on its own, and therefore the return is considered a legitimate return. My time of the Rabbanan, what's the basis of the Rabbanan who said Ein Gomrim Dino Shel Shor Ela Befonav, that the verdict on the animal cannot be handed in unless the animal is present? The pasuk says Hashor Yisokel V'gam Bol Av Yumos. The animal is stoned and the owner is guilty. The pasuk uses the word Yumos, the owner is put to death, but it doesn't mean that literally. However, we learn from the juxtaposition of points in this pasuk, the shor and the bailim, kamisas habailim, kach misas hashor. The way we would deal with a person that's guilty of a capital offense, so too we deal with the animal, ma bailim bifneim, avshor bifneim, just bifonav. Just like the owner, the person, if he committed murder, the gemar din, the verdict could not be handed in unless he was present. The person has to be present for the court proceedings. So too the shor bifonav. The court proceedings have to be done only in the presence of the animal. For Rabbi Yankiv disagrees with the Rabbanan's approach, looking more into the reasoning behind things. For Bianchiv Bishlamo Bailim Bene Tainaninu, I understand the need for the owner to be present because he has claims that he could make in his defense. Therefore, in his absence, the court procedure cannot continue. Elashor Bartan Osahu. The animal, though, is it something that's capable of making claims? Obviously, no. So its presence is a non-binding factor. And hence, Rabbi Yankiv concludes, Goimrim Dino Shashor Shelo Befonov. It's my feeling that the explanation we gave for this section of Gemara is hopefully, of course, a sufficient explanation, but I do want to point out that Rashi, in Dibor Masa Liflegu, that you'll see on the third narrow line, he goes over this. I hope we touched on all of the points in Rashi, but nevertheless, I recommend going over the Rashi for refining all of the points that we made in our explanation. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.